A message from the Florida Forest Service. Yard waste burning is one of the leading causes of wildfires in Florida. You can prevent wildfire by clearing yard debris after hurricanes. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Learn to burn safely at bewildfirereadyfl.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Got any brights yet? I do.
Just like that, Lady Greta told me, down by the coal creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty, beer in the tackle box, out on the flare. I'm baiting that hook with only the right look. Lure in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide, rubber's going out of sight, even if it tastes all night. Ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner, cause I kinda like a bit.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with David Graham, multi-species angler, host of the Boundless Pursuit podcast. You can find David at boundless-pursuit.com and on Instagram at Boundless Pursuit. Check out his podcast on Spotify and YouTube. And we are actually going to head straight on over the phones. We got Dave Westra standing by on line one, so we're going to grab his call and get the report from up in North Fort Myers. What's going on, Dave?
It's going to be the David and David show, and I would have
it
to
is
say,
the David and David show.
I don't have to say anything. Listening to the stories this morning, I'm more than satisfied to sit back and let David keep going.
Well, we got to get the update from you too, Dave. You know how that goes. It is a darn good story.
Everything's kind of gone. This week has kind of been, how am I going to say it, fishing-wise. The reports are okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know whether it's moon phase or tides or whatever it is, but things have just have kind of slowed down just a little bit. I mean, we get some fairly decent reports still coming in from, you know, all over the county and a little bit from offshore. But things are kind of settled in, and some of it, I'm sure, has to do with the heat.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Major complaint. There's a lot of people don't want to go outside. They'd rather stay inside. But it's reports are just, if I'd have to say, from the river fishing standpoint, just kind of average. Nothing exciting that I can really think of that we heard that was particularly in our neck of the woods. Anyway, and of course, we got a water quality problem up here, which may be keeping some people off.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some reports from, if I'd have to pick an area, I'd say north of Redfish Pass, as far as Pine Island Sound goes. The reports there, the folks that are getting out, some nice trout, mm-hmm. few snook, got the people off of the beaches and around the passes. I did have a couple of people come in and mention that they had picked up some pompano, but that was typical of how a lot of pompano fishing goes. You go out and you put your shrimp or sand flea out or whatever it is. In the first two or three casts, you catch a couple of three pompano, and you figure, boy, we're here today. This is it. We've hit the spot, and then it dives. So you only end up with the two or three pompano that you caught when you first put your line out. But it's funny how certain kinds of fishing goes. You get out early in the morning, you go to the spot that you think you want, you make your first cast, and you get this really good strike, and you get the fish to the boat, and you figure, boy, we've hit the spot, and that's the only good fish that you caught all day. This is the one that you caught on your first cast. But
yeah, well, especially I think this over the past week, just because as soon as that water temperature starts getting up there and that heat turns on, the fish are like, nope.
Once the fish,
not happening.
The whole heat thing is a bit concerning. Number one, it's hard on the fish when the water temperature gets up that high.
Yeah,
the oxygen level starts to drop a little bit, mm-hmm. And so it kind of behooves us to, when we are fishing and we're doing catch and release, is to catch them quick and turn them loose and let them get back in the water because they're stressed out anyway.
Yeah.
We did have one really notable piece of excitement that happened here at the shop on Thursday, and that is that Alberto came in.
He did. I knew he was planning on heading up to see you guys and to come in and meet you at some point, yeah. But I'm glad it finally happened.
Yeah, well, he came in. I don't know. Well, he was here two and a half hours maybe, and we swapped stories.
That sounds about right.
And Mike had met him before at ICAST, and so they knew each other and recognized each other, and I recognized him when he came in, and he came over to a certain other side of the shop. I was towards the back end over there messing with a reel or something. I finally could get it out of my hands, and I went over, and then we started talking, and we talked and exchanged stories, and he was showing me pictures, and then all of a sudden Mike Smith comes out and goes, opens the front door and starts bringing stuff in, and Alberto says, "What time do you close?" We said, "Right, that's what he's doing right now, Alberto, he's closing." But anyway, we spent probably about 2.5 hours talking.
Which is so easy to do with both of you guys, actually.
You know, I learned a lot listening to him, because he knows everybody in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people in the industry. The only thing is I don't remember their names, and he does. So anyway, but you know, good. It was a good time.
That's great. I'm so happy to hear he stopped in to see you guys, and you had a great conversation. What about, Dave, the offshore reports? Are you still hearing? Have you and the guys in the shop still been hearing some good reports for Red Snapper out offshore? What are those reports sounding like right now?
Pretty much. I mean, people are still going out for it. If I'd have to say anything, the overall excitement of that first week has kind of tapered down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Although, we can tell pretty much by our frozen bait sales that, you know, the guys that are running offshore and what they're going to do, because it's squid and sardines and stuff like that that they're going out. And we have those sales, every day. The reports in general are good. I won't say that they're great, but there have been some exciting, things that have gone on. There's some fellas that have gotten into really good snapper bites, and believe this one or not, this is a tough one. There were some fellas that were about, I want to say, they were in sight of land, so they were about on that. About on the edge of where you could see shoreline, and if they'd have gone another half a mile out, they wouldn't have been able to see any shoreline. And they're snapper fishing, and they're all of a sudden they're getting some runners on, and they're catching a few blackfin tuna in that close, which is really kind of amazing. But the other thing that showed up, and we've been hearing this now for about 3 to 4 weeks, are pods of mahi.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly small fish.
Mm-hmm.
Legal size, but small. All of a sudden, a couple of guys came in, and again, they're within sight of land, and they're catching some fish that are in the 6 to 8 pound category, which is highly unusual for us on this coast to have that size fish,
yeah.
And those fish in that close. So, there are some things that are happening out there. Folks just really need to keep their eyes open and be keen about it. I think being able to catch a blackfin tuna within sight of land
that's amazing for this side.
I want to say they're 20 pounders. These aren't little
fish,
which is typical of our coast. Most of the guys that catch blackfins, whether they're that close to shore or whether they're in 150 feet of water, our blackfin tuna population are bigger fish than you find on average than you than you find over on the other coast. Don't know why, but that just seems to be all of our reports are really nice, bigger than football size blackfin tuna, which is really cool. But the dolphin thing or the mahi thing is a real surprise. But we've been hearing it from a number of people again for about 3 weeks. So
yeah,
folks
so,
just need to keep their eyes open.
Yep.
And these guys were static fishing. They were anchored fishing where they were fishing. These fish showed up next to the boat.
Current has to be swinging. It was one of the eddies have to be swinging in close to Southwest Florida this time of year. I tried to check in with our guys at Roth's Fishing Forecast Service to see if they could give me any insight, because I know you mentioned this on air a couple weeks ago, but I haven't heard back from them yet. So if I get any scoop there, I'll keep everybody posted. But yeah, that's so interesting, Dave. So interesting.
Yeah.
What about the grouper fishing? How has that been?
The only group of people that we've talked to at all is some commercial guys that have been in here. They come in and buy their chum from us and sardines from us, and they are anywhere. Seems to be their better fishing is between 85 and 130 feet.
Yeah,
and they seem to be doing okay because they're in here on a regular basis, and they're not bitching and moaning about not being able to catch enough fish. So from that standpoint, I think it's fine.
And for the snapper, it seems like it's been out, from what I've heard, out past about 165, 170 feet, somewhere in that range.
For the bigger fish, yes.
Yeah.
For the bigger fish, it has been, on average, yes. And, you know, now, you know, it's not like the old days where everybody had a 75 horsepower or 90 horsepower motor on their boat and they ran out, and these guys are running out, and they've got four engines in the back of their boat. You know, they got $800 fuel bill.
Yeah, those are some expensive snapper they're coming home with, right?
Well, I mean, it's got to be fun. I mean, it's just got to be fun because it sure can't be economical to do it. It's fun fishing and the joy of getting out on the water and letting the wind run through your hair, if that's the right word, while you're running. But, you know, as hot as it is, I don't know that you want to sit in one spot too long. It's without a breeze out it's going to be a killer. You almost have to keep moving all the time.
That's true. Have you heard if they've still been getting them on slow-pitch jigs, Dave, or mainly cut baits out there?
Some of both.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our slow pitch sales are, and I'm going to clarify it. I shouldn't say slow pitch. Our jigging sales of the jigs and of the rods and the reels, it's kind of a mix.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think we talked about this before. People hear the term slow pitch, and they think they want to try it, and when they come in, they say, I want a slow pitch, and I want to look at, you know, rod and reel, and you show them the reel, and you go over to the wall, and you pick a couple of slow pitch rods out, and they look, and their eyes almost pop out of their head, you know, at the size of the rods. And then somewhere in the conversation, you ask them about what pound line they think they're going to be using, and that guy says 65. And so right away takes them out of the slow pitch category, and then you start talking a little bit more about the slow pitch, the two different types of fishing. They're both jigging, but one's a lot lighter and a lot more active than the other. And finally, they settle out as to what they want to do, and they kind of understand that. They're not. If they want a slow pitch, they're going to be slow pitching with 30.
Yeah,
not 65. And their rod is going to be. And in some cases, the guys will say that I still want to do it. I want a slow pitch with that. Then they end up with that slow pitch lighter outfit. And there are other people say, well, no, I want to stick with that 65 pound test. And then you get them into the other rod and maybe a little bit different reel. Reel's got a bit more line capacity to it than what they would be with the 30-pound slow-pitch outfits. But there are, I'd say now, it's at least a 50-50 split.
Wow, really?
Jigging.
Between
and natural bait fishing, yeah.
Yeah.
I know your guys on that go out on boats that have been jigging, and they take their jigs with them and their rods and reels, and they get out there, and their buddies are live bait fishing.
So you're talking about jigging overall or just slow pitch jigging? Like jigging overall, you think it's 50-50 or including slow pitch jigging or just slow pitch?
I think it's pretty close, 50-50. And the guys that take their stuff on the boats with the live bait guys, pretty soon, or natural bait guys, and pretty soon the natural bait guys are in here and they're getting outfitted because the guy with the slow pitch jig
is out fishing them.
Oh yeah, he's killing. I mean, he's got them in. He's got fish in the boat by the time these guys get their squid on the.
Yeah.
On the hook. You know, it's that type. Now there are a couple of guys that do come in here and based on who they're going with will determine about whether they're going to go out there and jig or whether they're going to fish with live bait. But I'm of the fellas that come in here because we kind of like the slow pitch thing and the jigging aspect of it. I'm going to say probably 50-50, I think. I may be wrong, but it's not far off. one way or the other. And so it's exciting.
That's...
And, you know, Cody and those guys, Cody was slow pitch jigging in real shallow water at one time, 35 feet.
Yep.
30 feet. He was using 25 gram and 50 gram jigs. In close to shore, everybody thinks you got to be way offshore. You really don't. You just have to scale your bait to the area that you're in. In fact, my understanding, you may talk to him. I think you're going to talk to him a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah, he's going to be
when he's in there.
He's going to be in the studio with Mike Sipos from Sea Grant. We'll have both of them in here together. I think you might have even suggested that combo, Dave. So yeah, they'll be in here on Saturday, August 5th.
Yeah, he may. I think Cody even took a couple of those light jigs offshore in real deep water. Where you would normally say be using a 160 gram jig, Cody took his 50 gram jigs out there and flipped it over to the side and caught some fish on it because it was a different presentation. Because that jig is kind of fluttering down at a slower pace, and what does that indicate? Does that indicate a slower moving or a wounded bait of some kind in the water column that the fish down below sees this thing fluttering around coming down? It came up and grabbed it. I believe Cody was fishing some really light stuff way offshore, which is not the norm, but it doesn't mean he can't do it.
No. Well, and he would be just the guy that would be experimenting with that kind of stuff. And yeah, we've got some amazing anglers in this community, and he's one of them for sure. Incredibly knowledgeable.
Well, I tell you what, David talking about catching that sturgeon was,
yeah.
You know, I only have one sturgeon story, and it isn't a successful one. But years and years and years ago, I got invited to go to G. Loomis's factory up in Woodland, Washington, and part of the deal was one of the days everybody that had been invited, the dealers that had been invited up there, got to go on a fishing trip on Loomis's dime. And so there were two busloads of us. And so the question the night before we left is, what do you want to fish for? This other guy and myself, we want to go sturgeon fishing and at Bonneville Dam is where we want to go. And so they said, okay. So when we were getting on the bus, the guy said, or van, they said, you two guys get in this van over here. So we drive on up and we rode for about an hour, and finally our van pulls off on the side of the road, and there's this stream there, you know, and the guy said, "Well, where are your waders?" And they said, "We're not going wade fishing. We're going sturgeon fishing." And they said, "Oh no, that was the other bus. That was the other group of guys there."
Oh, jeez.
You know. So we ended up in the Deschutes River, fishing for steelhead, which wasn't for us. Wasn't overly successful. And the guys that went sturgeon fishing slayed them.
Oh, man.
Sturgeon below the Bonneville Dam. And so my sturgeon exploits aren't very good. Although one of the things that I understand, I read this somewhere, don't know exactly how factual it was, but historically in the state of Florida, and this, we're probably talking millions of years ago, or anyway, hundreds, tens of thousands of years ago, the sturgeons were found always far south as Charlotte Harbor, in the Charlotte Harbor area. And, of course, now they're more up in the northern part of the state.
That's...
And my understanding, too, is Moat Marine actually raises them not only, I guess, for the caviar, but for their meat. And I've never seen it in the... in any of the food stores or fish markets or anything advertised as farm-raised sturgeon, but they evidently, in my understanding, is Moat Marine's.
I'll have to check into that
for the market, for the seafood market. So.
Yeah, I'll have to check into that, Dave. Well, they are playing our tune. They actually have been playing our tune, Dave. So we will catch up with you in 2 weeks because we're going to be off next Saturday due to ICAST. So we'll catch up with you in 2 Saturdays. And in the meantime, you have a great weekend and a great week. Thanks for your time, Dave. Take care.
Continue the stories, David. I was sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no, you're good.
Thanks, Dave. Take care.
Please, David.
Bye-bye. That is Dave Westro with Lear's Economy Tackle. If they don't have it, you don't need it. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida, ESPNSWFL.com, and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. Presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
A message from the Florida Forest Service. Yard waste burning is one of the leading causes of wildfires in Florida. You can prevent wildfire by clearing yard debris after hurricanes. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Learn to burn safely at BeWildfireReadyFL.com.
With Manny and Lorenz War of the Roses, when you get busted cheating, you can blame us.
Can I call you when we don't have these guys listening? They're putting ideas into your head.
Another guy has broken my heart.
But the truth will always come out. Listen to Manny and Lorenz War of the Roses wherever you get your podcasts.
Listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host David Graham, host of the Boundless Pursuit podcast, multi-species angler. And we are about halfway through this week's edition of Real Talk Radio. We got some text messages rolling in on the text line here, including David, your fishing buddy from Richmond, Virginia, Josh Dolan. He says, "Hey guys, this is Josh Dolan, David's buddy from Richmond, Virginia. Grant Elvis and I are checking in live from the marshes of Eastern Virginia. We're hunting the next world record northern snakehead and doing our best not to melt. It feels gross out here." Awesome podcast so far. I think some of us here in Southwest Florida can relate. Awesome podcast so far. Great listening material while you're on the hunt for a big one. We really enjoyed David's story of our trip for the sturgeon. Believe it or not, he undersold just how big the fish was. The head on that thing was 3 feet long. Good times for sure. Take care, guys. Enjoy that AC. So thanks, Josh, for checking in, and good luck out there in the marshes. So we also got a text message coming in from Gabe Kaplan's agent. He's wondering if the peacock bass will work their way up into Lee County a little bit more for a quick day of fishing. He says it's a little far for him to go to try to catch them. I'm assuming he means down in Collier County.
I don't know. I think we're going to have to see. I know that there are already plenty of reports of peacocks in Lee County, up in some of the canals, up in the Cape Coral area. So depending on how warm our average year-round temperatures stay, I mean, once the water temperature gets below 60 degrees in the winter months, that's when it becomes lethal for those peacock bass, and they have a really hard time making it through those really cool conditions, or cool conditions by peacock bass standards, given they're from the Amazon. So they really need a deep, deep, deep pocket that's probably 20, 30 feet deep in order for them to ride out some of those cold fronts. Then we got Art the Bills fan checking in. He sent in a picture of himself holding up a couple of nice porgies. He said porgy is his favorite saltwater fish. He needs to get back out there. Good to hear from you, Art. And let's see, we got a text message also from our good friend Murray Richter out in Texas. And he's checking in saying, good morning, Captain Debbie, David, and Rick. Article of the week was found in Boat US magazine. Another excellent reason to get kids hooked on fishing. And he's sharing a picture of an article that ran obviously in Boat US magazine talking about how IGFA has introduced a new category for junior anglers to compete in world record fishing. There's a new IGFA all tackle length junior category that's open to anglers 16 and younger that gives them the opportunity to set an official world record while promoting conservation through catch and release fishing. So you can head on over to IGFA.org to learn more about that. And then we got a text from Average Joe. He said, what's the best way and who can you contact if you're new to fishing, new to Southwest Florida, and want to learn to fish, and what gear is needed? Average Joe, what I would recommend is head on over to see our friends at Sportsman's Wholesale or Lear's Economy Tackle and let them know what kind of fish you'd like to ideally target here in Southwest Florida. I would recommend to most people probably starting off with some freshwater fishing and some of the local canals and ponds to get started with, but anyone at any of those two tackle shops can certainly help you. They're big on individualized attention, and they can help coach you in the right, point you in the right direction for sure. So, David, I want to get back into our conversation now, talking about jumping back and kind of wrapping up the giant sturgeon in Idaho story, and you and your friend Josh being out there, your host Steve that really kind of basically put you guys up for the 3 or 4 days that you were out there. I mean, talk a little bit about the thoughts and then the emotion that's just swirling through your head as you guys are making the trek back up this hill, basically heading back on that mile-long trek back to your vehicle after the experience that you guys went through.
Yeah, there. Well, I think that, like, the elation that we're riding on, I don't know, could have literally been a lifesaver for all I know, because you know, we were at the very real risk of hypothermia after taking the plunge in that water. And, you know, we kind of laughed and joked about how Josh, who just texted in, was wearing a street clothes, a cotton hoodie and some regular pants when he took the plunge into the water with those fish. But, you know, your mind is on what just transpired when you're hiking back. It's not on the sheer misery of the trek getting up there. But I don't know, it's always been my nature, and I keep kind of a small circle of guys that I'm willing to fish with, and Josh is very much cut from that same cloth, to where, like, we value that, I don't know, like, you want that difficulty in the trip. So it was like, while I'm hiking up and it's absolutely terrible, I'm also kind of like computing the value of the experience. It's like, this is terrible and this really sucks climbing out of here, but it's also going to make for a great, like, it's weird. It's like you have this twisted mind that you don't want it to be comfortable. Like, you don't want to just show up and have these amazing fish,
because on some level you want to feel like you earned,
right? You want
this experience of catching this fish.
There's certain fish out there for me I feel like need to be done like justice and should not come that hard that easily. I'm sorry. But yeah, so it's, and then it's another thing that, like, a fish like that, I don't know, it's fun to meet people who, you know, are able to go through that. Not a lot of people want to get wet and cold and have to climb and get uncomfortable. I think people will talk about wanting to do that or being able to do it, but,
The ones that actually will.
Yeah, it's and you need that because sometimes, like, maybe I start to get pessimistic or I start to get weak, and then you sort of shoulder on the other person's strength or vice versa. But, you know, shout out to Josh who just texted in. He's always been one of those guys that is just like the consummate grinder that will spend 2 weeks on the road sleeping out of his car, you know, just putting his body through hell to catch fish. So I'm like, this is somebody that I am willing to take with me. Because you don't want to get out there and things start going wrong, and then on top of having to carry your own weight, you got to carry somebody else's, like, weight. You don't want somebody else's negativity to drag you down, or, you know, I don't know. Pain and misery to slow you down. So,
yeah.
But not
to mention, but I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I can tell you, I will have, and I've seen this happen time and time again with people that I fish with. I will have clients on my boat who have less experience than other anglers, and they come on the boat and they're in the right frame of mind. They've got all kinds of positive vibes going on. Mm-hmm. They're just really looking forward to the experience. And even though they may not have as much, they may not have as much fishing experience, they may not have as much skill, but their mind is in the right place, they always are more successful. I've seen it happen time and time again.
Yeah, I think if you stay humble at all times and you're approaching it like a student and you're willing to learn, I mean, that's what happens. Like, failure is an opportunity to learn. But at the same time, when you're new to something, you don't know the difference between a good day and a bad day.
Right.
For all I know, I'm having a blast out there. You know, but yeah, I mean, the experience of hiking back up after having just caught that fish was, you know, this is a fish that, I mean, it's the biggest freshwater fish on the continent. Like, it's such a keystone, like mantle, Mount Rushmore type fish for somebody like me. So to get that one out of the way and to get a really nice one, it was great. And it was like, we didn't just show up and get chauffeured. It was, there was like all the elements that I want in the end of that, a near death experience, you know, a
potential
pain and
hypothermia.
Misery. Yeah. It's like, I knew that I'd have a lot to reflect on at the end of that. So, you know, that's the best stories are always that way. I have a hard time remembering days on the water where everything went right. You know, there's no details to the story. We showed up and we showed out. Yeah. Well, that's not fun. There's no book that's fun like that. No movie where there's not like that dip in the middle where something can go wrong. So it's like, you want that. You need that. It's just like, it's good for the spirit to have those victories.
Character building.
So
it's
like, because we had a lot of opportunity, but you know what? This is bad. This can only go worse. We need to leave. And had we done that, we wouldn't have caught the fish. You know, it's happened to me so many times that now it's to a point where, like, it's like the running joke. If something terrible happens, I immediately get excited. I'm like, oh, man, that, you know, something good's going to happen today. Doesn't always happen, but it's like, it's the right mindset to have.
Well, and see, the great thing about that is that in this age of participation trophies, this is the complete opposite of that. And in the days that we have now of social media and people thinking that every time they go out in the water, they're going to catch a fish in the snap of a finger, this is what true angling is really about. It's about putting in that grind. It's about putting in the time. It's about putting in the work. It's about having fishless days, learning from those experiences, and just continuing to push through. That's resilience.
Right.
That's resilience. That's what it's all about. All right, we need to head off to another break, but more with David when we come back. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida at ESPNSWFL.com and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. Presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
I got my toes in the water, ass in the sand, not a worry in the world, a cold beer in my hand. Life is good today. Life is good today.
A message from the Florida Forest Service. Yard waste burning is one of the leading causes of wildfires in Florida. You can prevent wildfire by clearing yard debris after hurricanes. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Learn to burn safely at BeWildfireReadyFL.com.
Hey, it's Andre Gardner, and I'm host of the Beatles Minute Podcast, delivered to you each and every week, the latest Beatles news. What will that Paul McCartney, John Lennon, AI Beatles song sound like? We'll let you know as soon as we hear it. Will we get a Paul McCartney archive collection release this year? Fingers are crossed. And I'm still hearing rumors of a 50th anniversary set by a solo Beatle coming out. Soon as I hear, you'll hear on the Beatles Minute Podcast. Download and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with Boundless Pursuit podcast host David Graham. And we are rolling, coming up on the 9 a.m. hour of Real Talk Radio. And we just got done, wow, talking about David's quest for giant white sturgeon in Idaho and the crazy conditions that he was dealing with out there. And yeah, and basically how all of those experiences just really make you feel like you solidified and earned that catch after you put in all that work. That's really what it's all about. You're not learning, you're not growing as an angler. Not to say that I've ever done anything anywhere near what you have done, but I have had those days where I've gone on trips with crazy Alberto that have lasted 24 hours straight, yeah. Or 2 days straight, and you're like, okay, you start hallucinating after no sleep for
right.
A couple of nights. But you're pushing through. You're always grinding through and looking forward to the optimism of what could happen at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you've interviewed some of those people. We were just talking on break about one of the gentlemen that you fished with on the East Coast when you were out there targeting Monster Jack Crevel on topwater poppers. So, yeah, anybody coming up on the podcast?
Oh, there's some really, really cool ones coming up.
Weeks.
I think one of the ones, I'll just say, I've got one coming up, this guy. Again, a lot of these people don't even have an Instagram, or they basically don't use it. But I'll find them.
They're just under the radar.
And it's like, it's whoever I think is interesting, really. It's not about interviewing a celebrity that I'm going to like garner all their followers from. It's people that I'm very fascinated by. There's this guy coming up soon. He's this Texan. He's got this wild, gnarly like beard and this unkempt hair. Like, he's a wild man. He's just a character. When you look at him, you're like, who's this guy? And he's a really interesting guy. It's probably one of the best conversations I've had so far. But he makes these trips, budget trips. Like, he'll save up. Guy lives in like a trailer that's like on one, flat tire. It's what he prides himself on. Lives out on this ranch and, intentionally lives way below his means so that he can do these trips. And he's a big game hunter as well. So he'll go out to Africa and like hunt, like, I might get in people's feelings, but like he'll kill like zebras and stuff. And he highlights kind of like, what that means to him. But he goes out and, spends time with these, I don't know if you want to call them tribes, just locals, just the natives.
Yeah.
And, he was just described the experience of like walking barefoot in the African bush at night and like hearing death, like hearing big cats hunting and like hearing like this side. And this is a very fascinating conversation. And he described shooting this one big game animal, harvesting its meat, feeding the village with it, and using some of the meat to go to the river and catching tiger fish with the meat. It was a giraffe. I'm like, this is the wildest stuff. But like his just like he is like a deeply philosophical type conversation, not so much technical, but it was just talking about like his, opinion on the meaning of life and stuff. I'm like, this is awesome. This is great stuff. But that one's coming up. I've had guys that immigrated to the US and they kind of tell their story of coming through that and developing as anglers. And there's a lot of really good ones. So I try to stay a little bit local, and then I'll expand out to people who are from other countries. I got a guy, not next week, but the week after, who runs Fish Columbia. So he's the guy that's the name of the outfitter, Fish Columbia. I'm sure a lot of people have probably seen their Instagram. It's like the 25-pound peacock bass, the Payara, popping for giant Kubera snapper. So that guy's coming on. But real interesting stuff, motivating things.
Yeah, that'll be a good one for sure. You know which episode I really enjoyed, too, was actually the Rough Fish episode with Drew you did relatively recently. So tell people, talk a little bit about what the definition of rough fish is, because you're out there a lot of times. We talked about this on the show when you were here in the studio in February. You're out there targeting a lot of species that people would consider to be, quote unquote, trash fish.
Sure.
So talk a little bit about trash fish / rough fish and the value that a lot of these rough fish bring to ecosystems across the United States.
Yeah, I thought that was a very important topic of conversation. Drew's a guy that I've talked to since I was a kid, like literally since my mom was still dropping me off at fishing locations. So we go way, way back. And
it's crazy.
And rough fish is just the opposite. Well, it's not really the opposite. It's just a definition. It's a categorical like label. You have sport fish. You have non-sport fish. Some people call it non-game fish. Some people call it rough fish. In freshwater, it's sometimes called rough fish. I guess that's a more PC term than trash fish.
Right.
And, you know, it's just bringing awareness to, like, if you really want to preserve the natural ecosystem, you can't especially use the label trash fish. I mean, we have native species that are essential to the way that the ecosystem operates. And so, you know, he runs roughfish.com. It was really just a conservation-toned conversation. So when you're talking rough fish from a native standpoint, you're talking about, like, in some regions, gar, bowfin, or mudfish, as they're called around here, certain species of suckers. Even people will consider sturgeon that way. Just geographically, every area kind of has its non-game species. But and a lot of these fish are, like, persecuted, or they're not regulated whatsoever. So, you know, you'll see these practices of just wanton waste, where folks will, you know, by whatever means, bow and arrow, gigging, whatever, they'll harvest basically unlimited amounts of native species. And then it's the practice where, you know, we've all seen the images where they're dumping them. They're throwing them in a big pile on the ground. It's like, you know, we got to be smarter than that. Like, this is, somebody's got to start saying something about this, because it's not sustainable. Like, you'll collapse an entire ecosystem, especially when these are top-level predators. You take out the top-level predator of any ecosystem, you ruin everything.
And I do remember talking with, when I went out to Texas and fished the Trinity River, I remember the guide that I went out with talking about that specific thing with those big alligator gar in Texas. That was becoming a big problem because people were targeting them, but they weren't, you know, they were harvesting the fish, leaving them dead alongside of the riverbank, and their populations actually dramatically dropped for quite some time. I don't know if that's changed, but
they have started to turn. I mean, the alligator gar is always kind of like the best case in point when you talk about that, because it's, you know, it's so big and it's so bold, and it's an easier one to kind of stand and make a case for, because they're you know, it's not a fish that proliferates out of control like crazy. It's a gigantic, slow-growing fish that takes, you know, about a decade to even become mature enough to start reproducing. So, like, they can't handle the high pressure. And again, obviously, that's like the top-tier predator in those river systems. You take them out, it allows everything else to, you know, it creates a vacuum.
Upsets the balance.
Yeah. But the same can be said for everything else. And I think I get it. I mean, it's probably a lot of fun to line up a shot and practice. I don't know. The case in point a lot of times uses, like, bow fishing. I get it. It's fun. It's fun to practice your aim and shoot a moving target. As long as it's done within a reason, I think. Anytime you open the floodgates and allow unlimited harvest of anything that's not being used, it's a problem. It's just common sense stuff. So it's, you know, that whole conversation was really interesting to me. It was meaningful as well. But it's in it. And then you want to talk about sport fish and what that means. A lot of these fish that are not considered sport fish are as game to fight take a lure, take a bait, take whatever. You can pattern them all the same ways.
Absolutely.
So it's like, what are we doing here, guys? You know, a lot of these fish that aren't game fish get bigger, faster, stronger than the more popular game species. And they're not being pressured. Like, the field is open. You got all these other people that are preoccupied with smaller, maybe more popular fish. And you can venture off and target these other fish that get, in many cases, bigger, faster, and stronger. And nobody else is messing with them. The information is not out there on how to pattern them. It's like it's an unsolved puzzle with many of these different fish. So to me, it's more fascinating. If you want to challenge yourself, you kind of have to figure it out. You can't walk into the local tackle shop and ask, hey, how do you catch these long-nose suckers, large-scale suckers, like Josh has been doing?
Right.
No one knows. They don't know where they're at.
Well, the bowfin is a prime example of that, too, which I know we talked about last time you were in the studio.
Yeah.
That's another great example. I mean, you want to talk about a crazy, hard-fighting fish. Mm-hmm. And on a fly rod, too, man, that is just such a rush.
It's a very easy fish to catch on accident. That's kind of the great irony with a lot of these fish. Like, right. We catch tons of them. Okay, now go out tomorrow and try to catch them.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works. You'll probably catch more bass than you've ever caught in your life.
It is the truth. Absolutely. All right, we're going to head off to another break, but more with David when we come back. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida on the ESPN Southwest Florida app, presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
I need to get my rear in high gear if I'm gonna be there by 8. I'm sitting at the table reading the label on a jar of Nescafe. Yeah, I'm sitting here wishing that I could go fishing, but I gotta go to work today.
A message from the Florida Forest Service. Yard waste burning is one of the leading causes of wildfires in Florida. You can prevent wildfire by clearing yard debris after hurricanes. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Learn to burn safely at bewildfirereadyfl.com.
Geek Culture Congress is for the nerd in you.
Yeah, this movie had, this was some of Groot's best moments. Fight scene. It's like Groot doing some CrossFit, doing some workouts.
Look for Geek Culture Congress on bpodstudios.com and wherever you listen to your podcasts.